Sahana vavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sah viryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. Very good. Welcome back. Welcome also to our many students who attend this class online. We continue with our study of chapter 14 of Uddhava Gita. And we saw, I said in my casual American English, that Sri Krishna began with a bang, so to speak. The chapter began with a bang, in that he plunged right into the topic of enlightenment without a question from Uddhava. Notice in the Bhagavad Gita, not this one, in the Bhagavad Gita, some chapters begin with a question from Arjuna, some chapters do not. Similarly, in this Uddhava Gita, some chapters begin with a question from Uddhava, but some chapters do not, including this chapter. So Sri Krishna plunged right into this topic, and not surprisingly, because of the profundity of the topic, Uddhava has some questions. So we come to his question today, and we'll see that in just a moment. So when Sri Krishna introduced this topic of enlightenment, he focused very specifically on the discovery, to use his language, in the language of Sri Krishna, to become enlightened means to discover his presence within you. Now, that's his language. In a more general sense, to discover his presence within you is to discover what we commonly call the inner divinity. And now to come to more Vedantic language, the discovery is to, the enlightenment is to discover your true nature as Sat Chit Ananda Atma, as pure consciousness, unborn, uncreated, unchanging, utterly untouched by worldly problems. This discovery is the goal. And in that brief teaching on enlightenment, Sri Krishna differentiated between two kinds of knowledge. So we talk about knowledge of God, knowledge of Ishvara, we talk about self-knowledge. The term that Sri Krishna used here was paroksha jnanam. Actually, he didn't use that term. He used the terms jnanam and vijnanam. Jnanam must be different somehow from vijnanam. By the way, Bhagavad Gita, I think chapter 7 or 9, I get the two confused. Either 7 or 9, I think, I'm not sure, is called Jnana Vijnana Yoga. I think it's 7, but it might be 9. Anyway, it's called Jnana Vijnana Yoga, but there the term Vijnana has a different meaning, has more a meaning of devotion, bhakti. In this chapter, Sri Krishna uses Jnanam in the sense of paroksha Jnanam, indirect knowledge, and he uses the term Vijnanam to mean direct knowledge, aparoksha jnanam, indirect knowledge. The example I gave last week, if I'm standing outside in the lobby and you hear my voice, you know I'm here. But that is indirect knowledge until I come inside, I sit down up on the on this chair, then you see me, and what was jnanam, or I should say paroksha jnanam, what was indirect knowledge becomes aparoksha jnanam, direct. In the same way, everyone who studies Vedanta begins with paroksha jnanam. I want to say that again because there's something extremely important here. We all start with paroksha jnanam. Indirect knowledge. People say, oh, this is also conceptual, it's also intellectual. Well, that's where it starts. That's the beginning point. It most certainly is not the end point. So you begin with paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge, a little bit abstract, a little bit conceptual, but that's not the goal. The goal is to discover Sri Krishna's presence within you. Is that abstract or conceptual? Certainly not. It's an immediate discovery that we call aparoksha jnanam, direct knowledge. And this was, I've just summarized what was given in the first part of the chapter, and Uddhava has been listening very carefully, and not surprisingly, if you have some questions, you're in good company. In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna didn't understand the first thing about everything that Sri Krishna taught, in the same way in this Uddhava Gita, Uddhava 2 has many questions. We'll see Uddhava's question right now. All right. Uddhava uvacha, Uddhava uvacha. This doesn't seem to be working. Would you advance the slide, please? Just like you advance all the slides, is it not advancing? You press the down key. That's not working. Yeah, we had some problem with this before. Then go to the taskbar, open up the PowerPoint, and see if you can do it from there. There we go. And I'll ask you then to advance the slides. Okay. This has a longer meter. And as always, as I'm chanting, read the translation and then repeat after me. Jnanam vishuddham vipulam yataitata. Jnanam vishuddham vipulam yataitata. Vairagya vijnana yutam puranam. Vairagya vijnana yutam puranam. Akhyahi Vishveshwara Vishwamurte. Akhyahi Vishveshwara Vishwamurte. Twad bhakti yogam chamahad vimrigyam. Twad bhakti yogam chamahad vimrigyam. Start in the third line. Vishveshwara. Uddhava addresses Sri Krishna as the Lord of the cosmos. Vishwa, Ishvara, Vishveshwara. And the Vishwamurte, the one whose murti, the one whose form is manifest as the entire cosmos, with these really big words. Uddhava addresses Sri Krishna. Notice he doesn't say, remember his cousin. So he doesn't say, Krishna Bhai. Or if he were in this country today, hey bro. But these very respectful terms after this very powerful introduction. So Uddhava asks then in that third line, Akhyahi, please tell me. Tell me what? First line, jnanam, that knowledge. Remember, Sri Krishna uses knowledge here, jnanam, as paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge. So please tell me that knowledge. We can call it scriptural knowledge. That's a correct meaning as well. Scriptural knowledge. Please tell me that knowledge which is vishuddham. Pure, maybe holy would be a better translation here, sacred, that pure holy knowledge which is vipulam. It is very extensively taught in all the scriptures, yata etat, such a knowledge. Please tell me that knowledge which is also, end of the second line, puranam, ancient, the knowledge which has been taught in all the ancient shastras, all the ancient scriptures. That knowledge, and here's a very important word, that knowledge which is vairagya vijnana yutam. Yutam means associated with, joined with. Joined, associated, that knowledge which is associated with vairagya and vijnana. So here's that second term. Jnana means indirect knowledge. Vijnana, again, contextual meanings. Elsewhere, vijnana means different things, all kinds of different things. Here, vijnana, Sri Krishna is using to mean direct, immediate knowledge, discovery of his own presence within you, what we call aparokshajnanam, which is enlightenment. In that discovery of Sri Krishna's presence within you, that is indeed enlightenment. So please tell me that knowledge, which is yutam, associated with vijnanam, enlightenment, and also associated with vairagya, dispassion. When you discover Sri Krishna's presence within you, you gain such contentment, satisfaction, and inner peace that you become relatively detached to anything external. So notice, he says, akyahi, please tell me jnanam. Notice what he did not say. See if you can figure this out. He did not say akyahi vijnanam. Why? Jnanam leads to vijnanam. This indirect knowledge leads to direct knowledge. So why don't you take the shortcut? Americans are famous for always wanting to do things quick. Jaldi, jaldi, this kind of thing. Americans don't like to... When I went to India, I learned how to wait in queues. Maybe things are better today, but long ago... I remember railway stations, long queues. Anyway, so suppose you say, why waste time with vijnanam? I'm sorry, why waste time with jnanam, indirect knowledge? Why not go right to the desired destination and teach vijnanam? Can you figure it out? An interesting observation here. You can't teach vijnanam. Vijnanam is direct, immediate discovery. You have to make the direct, immediate discovery of Sri Krishna's presence within you. Can I do that for you? Can anyone do that for you? No one but you can make that discovery. You can teach jnanam. I can teach jnanam, this scriptural knowledge, this indirect knowledge. I cannot make you enlightened. Only you can do that. You have to personally discover the truths that are unfolded in this text. You have to use those teachings properly to make that discovery. The metaphor you've probably heard me give before is that of a road map. A road map is like jnanam. It has information. Information that's led to lead you to a goal. But if you have a map and you don't go anywhere, then you don't reach the goal. And the map itself doesn't make you... You know, if you're... I said before, Vasanti criticizes me for using this roadmap metaphor. She says, who uses roadmaps anymore? Okay, so I have to update my metaphors. So here's a metaphor for the 2020s. So since you don't have a roadmap, you do have a map on the display in your car. So that roadmap tells you how to get from here to there. So if you sit in your car looking at that roadmap, it tells you how to get from here to there. Does a roadmap drive the car for you? Not yet. Elon Musk will make that happen for you eventually. Right now, the roadmap doesn't make you reach the... You have to reach the destination. So that's the metaphor. The roadmap represents jnanam, a scriptural knowledge, vijnanam. Personal discovery represents reaching your destination, represents enlightenment here. So, jnana, vairagya, vijnana, yutam, jnanam. This indirect scriptural knowledge leads to this vijnanam, this immediate direct discovery. Not only that, in the fourth line, tvad bhakti yogam cha, and also it leads to tvad bhakti yogam, you know the meaning of that, devotion, but bhakti yogam, what kind? Tvat, unto you. Devotion, devotional practices leading to you, Sri Krishna. Devotional practices that are mahad vimrigyam. Vimrigyam means sought for, sought after. Sought after by whom? Mahat, the great sages. So, Uddhava's opening question is, please tell me, jnanam, the knowledge that leads to enlightenment, and also teach me bhakti yogam cha, and teach me bhakti yoga. Why? Bhakti yoga also leads to enlightenment. Please tell me these. Next slide, please. Tapatrayena bihatasya ghore. Tapatrayena bihatasya ghore. Santapyamanasya bhavadvanisha. Santapyamanasya bhavadvanisha. Pashyami nanyat charanam tavangri. Pashyami nanyat charanam dvarangri. Dvandvatapatraram ratabhivarshat. Dvandvatapatraram ratabhivarshat. Start in the second line and Isha, O Lord. O Lord, santapyamanasya. For those who suffer, for one who suffers, it's singular. Santapyamana. This verb tap often means to suffer, but some of you know it also means to heat. Tapas can mean, has a whole, look up tapas in a dictionary, you'll find more than a dozen meanings. And one would be suffering. One would be heat. One heat would be a very common one. And notice, interesting, the word for heat is used for suffering in a hot country. Not surprisingly, I suppose, if the Eskimos had a word for suffering, would it be heat? It would be cold. Just to get a little cultural context here. Actually, we're going to see that in the next verse also. No, at the end of this verse. So, this word for suffering, the santapyamanasya, it literally means one who is being heated, one who is being cooked, as it were, when the temperature is very high, one who is being heated, bhava adhvani. On the adhvana's path, on the path of bhava, samsara, worldly existence. So you can imagine on a path where there are no trees in India, where you're being baked by the sun. Of course, it's the same thing here in summer. During in New Jersey, with on a path with no trees, being baked by the sun and suffering, that represents worldly life. Worldly life includes suffering. Notice, worldly life is not only suffering. There is a very pessimistic philosophy that says life is suffering, and then you die. That's a pretty pessimistic philosophy. That is not Advaita Vedanta. When you're walking along the path, there are some places where there are many trees and streams flowing and greenery and grass and all of that, but there are other places where it's just dry and treeless and you are baked by the sun. So a path goes through various different areas, different kinds of terrain, just like our lives go through different phases. Some phases are like a desert. You're being baked, you're being cooked, but other phases of life are like walking through a lush forest. So it varies. But here we're talking about the really hot part of the path, which is going up one line, gore, on that terrible path, which means not the path through the lush forest, but the path through that dry, hot desert. And that person who is santapyamanasya, being cooked, antapatrayena abhihatasya, is the metaphor, is that person is the metaphor of walking on that hot path. The metaphor represents abhihata, one who is overcome, not by heat, one who is overcome by tapatraya, three sources of suffering, not three sources of heat. Don't get the metaphor mixed up here. Three sources of suffering. What are those three sources of suffering? The language we use, adhidaivaka tapa, adhibhautika tapa, and adhyatmika tapa. These are these Sanskrit words which are typically used to describe three sources of suffering. We'll start adhibhautika, that which comes from bhutas, that which comes from the world. Like too much sunlight would be adhibhautika tapa. Then there's adhidaivika tapa, tapas that comes from within. And that tapas would be like, you forgot to bring an umbrella, not for the rain, you forgot to bring an umbrella for the sun, and you're cursing yourself for forgetting your umbrella. So cursing yourself makes you miserable. Whose fault is it that you forgot the umbrella? Your fault. Whose fault is it that you're cursing yourself? Your fault. Whose fault is it that you're suffering because of the sun? Your fault. This is the last one, adhyatmika tapa. This is a tapas which is adhyatmika. It's your fault. So sometimes it's the fault of nature, sometimes it's your fault, and sometimes it is adhidaivika, the fault of the so-called gods. So probably a reference, better understood as a reference to karma, past karmas. Daiva, in fact, in the Mahabharata, the word daiva is frequently used for karma, past karmas, purva karma. So adhidaivika, in this context, I think best understood as suffering caused from bypass karma. So, and this is an accurate summary of what makes us suffer in life. Some suffering comes from nature, from outside. Some suffering is caused, we make for ourselves. And some suffering is, we don't know, so we attribute it to past karmas. So these three kinds of suffering are tormenting this poor traveler on this path, on his ghore adhvani, on his terrible path of suffering in life. And Uddhava is pouring his heart out here do you think he's talking about someone in general? Someone in general is suffering on the path. It's like a friend asks you for advice and says, what would you tell someone who is suffering because she's having a problem with her spouse and this and that is happening? What would you advise someone like that? Someone like that means whom? Means her, right? So Uddhava here is using similar language. One who is suffering on this terrible path of worldly life means Uddhava, it means him. And Uddhava says, now it becomes very clear, he says, napashyami, I don't see anyat sharanam, any other refuge. I don't see any other refuge which means there are no trees around. There's no dense forest around. There's no stream next to the path. Uddhava finds himself standing in the desert, the hot, scorching desert of worldly life, not surprisingly, because his country is engaged in civil war and is about to self-destruct. I don't want to go back to the whole setting for this chapter. Go back to the very first class where we set out the context. But this discussion between, just like Arjuna's discussion with Sri Krishna takes place on the battlefield right before this 18-day war, this discussion takes place right before their homeland self-destructs with civil war. We won't go into that further right now. So definitely, how is Uddhava feeling? Right? This is, so he is the one who's being scorched by all these terrible things. But he sees one, what, glimmer of light, we would say. But he uses a very, we might say, Uddhava is standing in front of Sri Krishna, and Sri Krishna is his hope. Now, we might describe Sri Krishna as the glimmer of hope for Uddhava, but he gives a very different metaphor, wonderful metaphor. He says, I don't see any other refuge other than Tava Angri Dvandva, other than your 2 feet. Your 2 feet, Angri, is both calf and foot. I don't find any other refuge other than Tava, your Dvandva, Angri Dvava, your 2 feet. Meaning, you know, it's cultural. Yeah, I think most of you know that in Hindu culture, a common form of respect is to bow, to touch one's person's feet. So this is a respectful way of referring to Sri Krishna as one's refuge, as his refuge. And here's the metaphor, not glimmer of hope. Sri Krishna's 2 feet, meaning Sri Krishna's teachings. Sri Krishna's teachings are like what? Atapatrat Amrita Abhivarshat. His 2 feet are Amrita Abhivarsha. They're like a rain of nectar. His 2 feet rain nectar. This metaphor will become more clear in the next verse. Feet don't, you know, if you were teaching, imagine if you were a school teacher teaching some children poetry. What is the connection between feet and rain? None. So this doesn't look like very good poetry until you get to the next verse. So you have to wait till we see. So Sri Krishna, the idea here of Amrita Abhivarsha, it's not an Abhivarsha of rain. It's an Abhivarsha of Amrita, literally immortality, or in this context, freedom from suffering. We're not talking about rain here. We're talking about suffering. So your feet rain upon one, and we use rain metaphorically here, are the rain of Amrita, immortality, and this Amrita is what is, of course, in mythological stories, the gods drink the Amrita and become immortal, and here Amrita represents these teachings through which you break free from the cycle of being reincarnated again and again and again. You also break free from suffering. You become totally free from suffering. Drinking that Amrita, the gods drink this Amrita. How do they know if it's authentic Amrita or not? Right? So if it's authentic Amrita or not, how do they know? They have to wait till they die to find out whether it is, what are the terms you'd use? Whether it is pakka Amrita or whether it is nakli. How's that? Few Hindi words I know. Imitation. So whether it's real or whether it's imitation. So would they have to wait till they die? So drinking that amrita blesses you immediately with freedom from suffering. So now we get this beauty, and I'm spending time here because I love this poetry. I hope to convey some of that love to you. When I was in school, I hated poetry. Now I love it, and I'm hoping to share my love of poetry now with you. So, Amrita Abhivarsha, your 2 feet rains upon, your 2 feet can rain upon me with, can rain upon me Amrita, the nectar of immortality which can free me from suffering. Your 2 feet which are, and now here's an even stranger metaphor, your 2 feet which are like atapatra. Atapatra means umbrella. Like an umbrella? Look at the word for umbrella here. Do you see the word tapa inside? Tapas, an umbrella used for heat, right? You know, in this country, we're used to using it in rain. Interesting, in India, see if this works for you. In this country, we use the umbrella for rain, and when it's sunny out, we put the umbrella away, right? In India, it's ulta. Opposite, because when the sun is scorching, you use the umbrella, and when the monsoon rains come, you put down an umbrella and enjoy the rain. Some people do that, right? At least that's what you see on all the Hindi movies. Does the heroine go out in the rain with her umbrella? Never! Because then the producer can't show her with her wet sari. That's an important part of the movie. Sorry, I'm making fun of indie movies here. Anyway, so Sri Krishna's feet are considered, Uddhava very poetically says, "O Krishna, your lotus feet are like the, which means surrendering to your lotus feet, receiving your blessed teachings, is like receiving a rain of immortality, the rain of amrita, nectar of immortality, which can remove all suffering. Your blessed feet, receiving your teachings, is like atapatra. It's like an umbrella which guards against the scorching sun." Now, in addition to poetry, there is something extremely Vedantic here. It's just so much fun to see this, because this skillful poets use double meanings a lot. These verses are composed by Vyasa, skillful poet, or one of Vyasa's descendants, we don't know. And Vyasa, whoever composed this, extremely skillful, we find here a double meaning. Which means, at the level of Advaita Vedanta, in what sense are Sri Krishna's surrendering at Sri Krishna's feet is a metaphor for receiving his spiritual teachings? In what way does that resemble an umbrella which removes the scorching heat? An umbrella prevents heat from reaching you. Notice the umbrella doesn't give you anything. It removes something. Can you get it? The umbrella doesn't give you anything. The umbrella removes something. Advaita Vedanta doesn't give you anything. You already are Satchidananda Atma. Your true nature already is divine. What does Vedanta do? It removes something. Ignorance and the suffering caused by ignorance. So that metaphor of the umbrella is brilliant. Because it doesn't give, it removes. It doesn't give you. This is even scientifically true. Suppose you want to get cold, and you walk into an air-conditioned room because you're too hot. You walk into the air-conditioned room to soak up the cold, the coolness. Someone with a scientific bent of mind would say, no, you don't. You don't soak up coolness. Coolness is not a thing. What is a thing is heat. Heat is energy. When you go into that cool room, you radiate heat. You get rid of something. Becoming cool is not a matter of getting something. It's a matter of getting rid of something. Anyway, I'm giving a scientific metaphor to emphasize this point. If you want to be, we'll use the American sense of cool. If you want to be cool, if you want to be chill, you have to get right. That's great. If you want to be chill, you don't have to get anything. Get rid of what's irritating you. What's left, can call it chill. Sri Krishna would call it ananda. What we call chill, he calls ananda. Beautiful metaphor. And the metaphor comes again in the next verse. Let's see that. This is the end of Uddhava's question. Dashtam janam sampati. Long meter. Dashtam janam sampatitam balesmin. Dashtam janam sampatitam jalesmin. Kala hina kshudra sukorutarsham. Kala hina kshudra sukorurusham. Samudharainam kripaya pavargar. Samudramainam kripaya pavargar. That refa over the V is wrong. Vachobhira sincha mahanubhava. Vachobhira sincha mahanubhava. Starting that last line to make the connection to the metaphor. Uddhava cries out to Sri Krishna, Mahanubhava, O great one, O great Krishna, O mighty Lord, asincha, rain upon me. Literally, sprinkle me, but rain down upon me. Rain how? Vachobihi, with your words. Rain upon me your words of wisdom. So that's the conclusion of the metaphor. Otherwise, what is the connection between umbrella and feet, or rain and feet? So here we get the connection. So the feet are the source of teachings. Unless you go to the guru's feet, you don't receive those. And as a, by the way, guru's feet is a matter of attitude. Allow me just for a moment here to address our online viewers. To seek the guru's feet is not to be physically present. That's not the case. To seek the guru's feet is to seek the guru's teachings. It's to have an attitude of value and respect for the guru's feet, teachings. That's what guru's feet means. So don't, otherwise, all of you here in the hall, you have access to guru's feet, and all of the people watching online, they don't? They do. It's a matter of attitude. Okay. So, this sprinkle me with your words of wisdom, so to speak. Now go up at the top. sprinkle me. Who am I? I am the one. Another, here we have a different metaphor. Earlier metaphor was walking along that path, which is sometimes exposed to the elements and sometimes shaded. Now we get a completely different metaphor. Uddhava describes himself in the first line as one who is sampatitam, one who has fallen. One who has fallen where? Belay, into a hole. Asmin belay. I'm fallen into this hole. What could be worse than falling into a hole? Falling into a hole with a poisonous snake in it. And that is the metaphor given here. He says, I have fallen into a hole in which I am a janam. I am a person who is dashtam. I have been bitten. I have been bitten by what? In the second line, kala ahina, by the snake of time. This, by the way, would be called a mixed metaphor. Sometimes you get the metaphor first, and then you get that which the metaphor represents. You get drishtanta first, and then darshtanta later. Sometimes you get the two interwoven. So here they're interwoven. I have been bitten by the snake of time, representing worldly suffering. The snake of time is the poison of the snake of time is what keeps you stuck in this pattern of birth and rebirth in time and day-to-day suffering. Every day, there's a little more suffering. Yes, there's some pleasure every day also. If there weren't some pleasure every day also, you wouldn't bother getting out of bed, right? Why bother? But every day is not only suffering, also some good things. But if you are, look at his metaphor, it's pretty poignant. He has fallen into a hole in which there's a poisonous snake. What could be worse than that? This poisonous snake has bitten him. And therefore, he says, kshudra sukha uttarsham, describing himself, or one who has fallen into that hole, someone who is uttarsha, craving for sukha, a little bit of relief, kshudra, and feeling so miserable, someone who is so miserable and feeling for even a little bit of relief. Look at this. First you fall into a hole, then you see the snake, then you get bitten. That's a pretty bad day. So someone in that situation will be so entirely miserable, and that represents the person who has recognized that every time, let's make the point, a bad day is falling into the hole, seeing a snake, and getting bitten. Let me see if I can do this. A bad day is getting out of bed, going to work, and getting criticized by your boss. How's that? So you fall into the hole, you see the snake, and then you get bitten. You get out of bed, you see your boss, and you get a different kind of bitten. You get your head bit off, so to speak. So if you're suffering this kind of bad day, you want some relief. And with his metaphor, Uddhava cries out for Sri Krishna for relief. And we'll see the beginning of Sri Krishna's reply here. Next verse, please. Thank you. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. We're back to the short meter here. Ittame tat pura raja, ittame tat pura raja, bhishmam dharma bhratam varam, bhishmam dharma bhratam varam, ajata shatru papracha, ajata shatru papracha, sarve sham nonus shrinvatam, sarve sham nonus shrinvatam. So Sri Bhagavan, the blessed Lord, Sri Krishna, Uvacha, he said, he replied to Uddhava with these words. He said, ittam, in this manner, pura, in this manner means referring to Uddhava's questions, etat, with regard to your question, Uddhava, pura, long ago. Long ago, what? Drop down to the third line. In the second line, well, actually in the first line itself, Raja, there was a king. Pura, long ago, once upon a time, how many stories begin like that? Pura, once upon a time, there was a Raja, kinchit, Raja, asti. That's how these beginning Sanskrit texts, they want to teach you. Asti kinchit raja. There was once upon a time there was a king. And what was his name? Third line. Ajata Shatruhu. His name was Ajata Shatru. Literally mean one for whom no enemy ever remained unconquered. That's the literal meaning of the word, but it's actually referring to Yudhishthira. And you'll see why in just a moment. Others can be referred to as Ajata. It's like saying, oh, great one. You know, it's a term of respect. It could be applied to many people. Similarly, Ajata Shatru is a term of respect. It could be applied to many. Here it's being applied to Yudhishthira, the eldest of the five Pandavas. So Raja Ajata Shatruhu, Yudhishthira Papracha, he asked. By the way, notice in chanting, it's not papracha, it's papracha. There's a reason for that. It's not papracha. Papracha. That pause is required because of pra, which is a conjunct consonant. So that pause is not accidental. Papracha. So Yudhishthira asked whom? Bhishmam. He asked Bhishma. Bhishma, who was Dhrita Bratam, Varam. Bhishma is the Varam, the best of Dharma Bratam, those who uphold Dharma. So Yudhishthira asked Bhishma, Bhishma, the family elder, who is the foremost upholder of Dharma, and he asked him, Yudhishthira asked Bhishma, in what circumstance? What was the occasion? Sri Krishna describes the occasion. He says, it was a time when sarvesham, all of us, sarvesham naha, all of us would include Sri Krishna, would include the five Pandavas, would include, obviously, Bhishma, and would include many others. All of us, anushrinvatam, all of us who were listening, all of us were gathered together listening to Bhishma intently because he was about to die. This is after the battle. Bhishma has been shot through with arrows by Arjuna himself, and he lies on the battlefield on the so-called bed of arrows. Bhishma lies dying. In fact, Bhishma would already be dead if he didn't have the boon of being able to choose the time of his death. He should be dead. But because of a blessing, he's not quite dead. He's almost dead. And he's speaking his last words to the assembled, which included Sri Krishna and the Pandavas. So this discussion is taking place at the end of his life. Let's see, next verse is a better place to end our class today. We have a few minutes anyway. Nivritte Bharate Yuddhe, Nivritte Bharate Yuddhe, Suhridn Suhrin Nidhana Vihwalaha Suhrannidhanavihvala Shrutva dharman bahun paschan Shrutva dharman bahun paschan Moksha dharmanu prachata Moksha dharmanu prachata. Yeah, we have to see this verse. So when was this conversation taking place? Bharate yuddhe nivritte. When the yuddha, the battle, which battle? Bharata yuddha, the battle named Bharata, Mahabharata. When that battle, nivritte, had come to an end. So when the battle had concluded, this, by the way, this reference is to the... Yeah, we'll see that in a moment. So, and in that situation, actually, let's see the, what order to take this. And we'll go in order. So they're gathered there on the battlefield at the end, after the battle is over. This is actually the scene that takes place in the Shanti Parva of the Mahabharata, the longest. It's book 12 of the 18 books. It's the longest book. It has three major sections that we'll talk about in just a moment. So in that context, after the war is over, Suhrit Nidhana Vihvalaha Shutva. So Shutva, having listening to Bhishma, Shutva. And who is listening to Bhishma? Suhrit, who are Nidhana Vihvalaha. Suhrit, friends. Friends of whom? Who's speaking these words? Sri Krishna. So Sri Krishna would say, my friends. My friends who have gathered around Bhishma to hear his final words. And my friends, meaning the Pandavas, who are Nidhana Vihvalaha. Nidhana means end, conclusion. My translation, overwhelmed by loss, which is okay. But I think end or conclusion is more meaningful here, because he says that they are vihvala, overcome, fine. They're disturbed. They're disturbed at the nidhana, could be by the loss of so many of their... In fact, both meanings work fine. They're disturbed because of the nidhana. Nidhana, again, look it up in the dictionary, more than 12 meanings, one of which is definitely loss. So they're disturbed because all of their beloved family members are lying dead on that battlefield. By the way, the Kauravas, 100 dead Kaurava cousins are laying dead on that battlefield. Wouldn't you feel bad if all of your cousins died? There might be one or two of them you don't like very much. I know how that works. But most of them you're very fond of. So if they're... sorry. So 100 of their cousins are lying dead, and so many others. They're very upset. They're very disturbed. But there's, a second meaning here. And the second meaning comes from the fact that nidhana not only means loss, also means end. The war is over. And the Pandavas are victorious. You would think the Pandavas would be elated. We won! Yay! Like at the end of these sporting matches. Yay! Everyone is so excited. How are the Pandavas? Vihvala. They're upset. They won the war, and they're upset. In fact, they're overcome by grief. They won, and they're still overcome by grief. Pretty important message. This is one of the reasons the Mahabharata is so rich with spiritual wisdom. This is a great example. Winning doesn't make you happy. They won. Are they happy? Are they like these sports people? They go nuts on those, after some big big foot soccer or this cricket. Everyone, they go nuts. Pandavas won. They should be elated. They're depressed. Why? We're going to see why. Well, actually, we've already discussed why, but we'll see it in more detail. The obvious reason is all of their loved ones are lying dead on a battlefield. Every win comes with some loss, or two sides to every coin. So your life is no different. Let's go for a metaphor here. What would be a victory for you? Suppose in your workplace you have been passed over for a promotion several times, and you finally get the promotion. You've been waiting for this promotion for several years, and you finally get the promotion. Yay! And you may come home elated until you go back to work tomorrow and discover that your workload has just tripled. Will you feel elated when your workload has tripled? And notice, tripling your workload doesn't negate the win, so to speak, of getting promoted. Both are simultaneously true. That is, you got a promotion. True. You got a big increase in salary. True. You got three times the work to do. Also true. And one does not negate the other. Having the big salary doesn't negate the problems associated with a tripled workload. Having a tripled workload doesn't negate the increase in salary. Both are simultaneously true. This is a Pandava situation. They won the war, which doesn't negate the fact that their 100 cousins are dead, nor does 100 cousins being dead negate the wonderful fact that they won the war. Both are simultaneously true, and I'm kind of stressing this point because we often think in these very black and white terms, you win or you lose. Life is more complicated than that. We have to come out of this very categorical thinking. It's good or it's bad. It's both. Almost everything in life cannot be accurately described as good or bad. Almost everything is a combination of both. The good part is true. The undesirable part is simultaneously true. We need to learn and train ourselves to be alert to both sides. When you see in world events, some war, some problem, there are two, you know, everyone says there are two sides to every story. So let us learn to look at both sides. Otherwise, you won't get it. You won't see properly. If you only look at the Pandavas' victory, you won't understand why they're so sad. If you only look at their 100 Kaurava brothers lying dead on the battlefield, you won't understand the importance of the Pandavas winning to restore Dharma to the kingdom. We must see both sides all the time. Let's finish this. So they have been listening, Shutva, having listened to Bhishma, having listened to what? Dharman Bahun. Having listened to many teachings about Dharma. Many teachings about Dharma is a reference to the structure of the Shanti Parva. Shanti Parva we studied, the Moksha Dharma Parva here at our ashram. Moksha Dharma is the third part of the Shanti Parva. What are the first two parts? First part is called Raja Dharma. The Raja Dharma, all of this takes place while Bhishma lies dying and he's teaching the gathered family members. The first thing he teaches, Yudhishthira, all of this is given to Yudhishthira. So first he teaches Raja Dharma, how to be a king. That's what it is. In the Shanti Parva, first Bhishma teaches Yudhishthira how to be a king, Raja Dharma. Then he teaches Apat Dharma, how to be a king in this horrible situation, Apat, disaster. How to be a king at a time of calamity, Apat Dharma. First, Raja Dharma is taught first, how to be a king. Then Apat Dharma, Bhishma teaches Yudhishthira how to be a king at a time of calamity. If I remember right, the Vishnu Sahasranama, I think, comes in that middle part. I think so. So how to cope with calamity? Recite Vishnu Sahasranama. And as you know, it is recited at times of calamity. Okay? And then finally, how to find peace and contentment, even at this time of calamity. They won the war, but they're still suffering. How to gain free from suffering, that's the purpose of, last line, moksha dharman. So, moksha dharman aprachata. So having listened to, this is referring to Yudhishthira, who, Shrutva, Yudhishthira, having listened to the Raja Dharma taught by Bhishma, how to be king, Apat Dharma, how to rule at a time of calamity. Now Yudhishthira, aprachat, he asks Bhishma, moksha dharmam, moksha dharman, plural. Teachings about how to gain moksha, how to gain liberation, how to gain peace and contentment in the midst of a calamity. That's the context. And we'll see that in our next class. All right. Quick announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our Upadesha Sahasri Vedanta class tomorrow at 10 o'clock, followed at 11 by satsang. Come with your questions. Also, we have a brief volunteer meeting immediately after these classes. You can meet Jim. I want to announce that the class now will be held at the back of the hall. So instead of going down into the dining hall, right in the back of this hall, you can meet with Jim after class. And we'll conclude with our prayers. Om Gananahan Twa Ganapatigam Vamahe Kavingavinam Upamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahanashranvan Utabhisidasadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Ratmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadgurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritangamaya om shanti 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 om tat sat.